Hello, grandkids, and welcome to another very special episode of the Stunt Gritty Audio, numbered 351. For the first time ever in the same call, we have Chris Calamita. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right, Kevin.
And we also have the poor lonely host who's been left out in the lurch by a sunbathing part-time Mexican now. Jeremy Mays, but his partner Shahid is here to join us. How you doing, sir?
Well, I was doing fine until you put that image in my head. So
didn't need it. Trying to get rid of it.
Well, I didn't say that he was bathing in the nude.
Well, if he was sunbathing, then he had to. No, well, let's just keep it moving.
Well, right before the show, we were organizing thoughts, and we wanted to go chronological, but it's also kind of a most current thing. The second on Sunday that I saw an update from the WWE that Ryback versus Kalisto was on the pre-show, and the fact that Kalisto won again, I kind of started to think something funny was going on.
Yeah, I watched the match, and when I saw the pre-show Steeler weight belt he was wearing, I got the feeling he just didn't give a shit anymore at that point.
I wish I would have seen that in person, but I joined in a little bit later in the show. They're a little closer to pay-per-view time. Because that weight belt did sound hilarious, and I am a little surprised. He's the second guy who's kind of spoken up after getting not Future Endeavored yet, but Adam Rose kind of had a little piece when he got suspended, and now Ryback, I don't know, it's not really a suspension, is it?
No, it's just more like, can't agree to a contract, so go home until you do, or go home and stay home till the contract's out. But it's just weird because he's been having great matches with Kalisto. Like, they had a pretty good match at Mania, the pre-show that had the arena watch. They had a great match on Sunday. Yeah. And it's funny, like, I read that little Tumblr post he put about that, because you didn't see him in the I knew something was up when you didn't see him in the Battle Royal on Monday. Like, considering he just had a match Sunday night for the title, they're having a number one contender for it Monday. He's nowhere to be found. And then this story comes out.
Yeah, I mean, he's just another one that he's just such a curious case. Like, I don't know how you go from as far as they pushed him, which was main eventing in a Hell in a Cell with CM Punk of pay-per-views to just being completely in the doghouse.
He was a victim of really the only time in the last 20 years they had a long-term plan and they refused to deviate from it because they already had Rock and Cena, penciled into the WrestleMania that year, and having Punk dropped the title to anyone but Rock or everything that they had planned. But Ryback was over. He was insanely over at that point, and they probably should have, looking back, they probably should have gone with it.
It's easy to say that in hindsight because of, Ryback got over bigger than they thought he ever would, but at the same time, you're playing it with something with, John Cena and The Rock, and you have. And the only reason CM Punk had that belt as long as he had it was to, it's funny, he can thank The Rock for that because he built up that belt for The Rock, so The Rock can build it up for John Cena. Like, Ryback's this, we want you to be there, but we didn't expect you to be this good right now. Like, he's just a victim of time, like Chris said.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I guess it's always a surprise to me, though, that he never kind of got back in their good graces. Like, I'm not completely sure what he did to deserve this. It's always one of those things that's just curious to me. I don't feel like you're ever going to get a good reason.
I mean, I know Punk hated working. You know, he's said it on Punk Cabana's podcast, obviously. Punk hated working with him, but it seemed like just to screw with CM Punk, they enjoy just putting them back together, like every few months, just to get a rise out of Punk. So I don't think they were taking CM Punk's words on, you know, Ryback as a worker to, you know, as a, you know, as a big black mark against him. I just, I think they were just, it was always circumstances that, you know, hurt his big pushes. There was always maybe someone else they wanted to push more, and was, you know, maybe better suited for the spot.
I think the biggest thing that happened to him besides the time of CM Punk stuff was the Shield game. Like, because that's when they first came, they had that big match, like that six-man match, he was involved with that. And it seems like ever since they were on the roster, Ryback kind of, you know, slid a little down, because, like, we got these new guys that's kind of cooler. Like, Ryback always said, like, Ryback is, his main mistake was being born in the wrong decade. Like, if he was in the 80s, he'd have made a lot of money with Hulk Hogan. Like, with that look, with that style, that whole, I'm a big meathead, blah, 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 but self-aware with that. But, like, now it kind of stands out. And then the whole stuff with Ryback, so, and tweeting and all that nonsense and getting punished for that, getting hurt and being out all that time, then, you know, coming back finally, getting the belt that Daniel Bryan was supposed to have, and then, you know, the little stuff. Like, it's always like, you know, he gets a push and stuff happens. Like, I'm not sure about him. They had him do all the stuff with, you know, the Big Show and Kane. And then he's like, you know, no offense, but I need singles titles because, you know, that's where the money is. Don't take it personal. And then this stuff here, it has to be tough. Like, he was at, you know, if not the top, at the very top. And then just the drop down, the deal with Curtis Axel for months. And then now I'm realizing, like, he probably has a high opinion of himself, but he also knows it's only so high he's going to get no matter what he does. And it's too many people in front of him. And they're going to be in front of him for a while, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand, well, I guess I understand him walking away. I understand their reluctance too.
But it's an interesting time to be a mid-card or lower guy. I mean, you have value, but it's not like the Monday Night War era where they're going to be bidding. There isn't this second big promotion, you know, bidding for talent. I mean, if a guy like Ryback wants to go and try out the waters in Japan, indies, conventions, a pro wrestling tea store, you know, he can do that, and he'll probably do okay, but on the same token, WWE could do okay without him, too. So, you know, in an era where there's very few true stars, and the brand is the big draw, and the company's being sold on cable rights fees and network subscriptions at $9.99 a month, you know, talent, unfortunately, is probably more expendable than ever.
Yeah, I would say in his case, his best bet, and I know people may mention this, is going overseas. Like, New Japan, you know, filling the spot in New Japan that people left to come to WWE. Like, he has the look, you know, big, muscle-bound American. And he's a lot better in the ring than people kind of give him credit for. Like, he won't necessarily lead a match, but he can kind of hang with anybody because he's agile enough to take bumps right. And, like, work different styles. He can definitely play that big, you know, monster American heel and make money over in Japan if he wants. I doubt he'd go to Lucha Underground because he could probably make more money in Japan. And he's not in that position where he has to go. Like, he has to work in America to make money. Like, he can go somewhere else and make money if he wants. And if he was smart with his money, considering he's been around, at least in the WWE pipeline for, what, 10 years? Even though it doesn't seem like he's been around that long. Like, I heard about Ryan Reeves a long time ago. 2016. So if he was smart with his money, he doesn't necessarily have to go, you know, to the bingo hall or Virgil.
Well, and I mean, he did say in his little Tumblr thing that he was smart with his money. I would be interested just because it seems like there are at least a couple of people that did go over to Japan and came back. I mean, Luke Gallows is obviously a guy that was in the WWE and is at least for the time being, is getting some type of attention rather than what he got the first time around. And I know that Albert didn't pan out, but the guy's got a pretty solid job now as head trainer down in NXT. So I think they'd be more, the WWE would be more willing to give him a shot again if he went over to New Japan or something of that nature. And I don't know, maybe he'd learn something. Maybe just not being in that particular environment would help him out.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary, like, you know, the way they're talking, it's not like they're leaving on bad terms. It's almost like a situation, like, MVP was in the same boat, like, you know, no offense, but I know my career is only going to go so far here. I'm ready to go somewhere else. He went over to Japan, and then he went to TNA, and now he's going to be, like, in Lucha Underground for season 3. Like, Rob Beck's whole thing is like, you know, if we'd agreed on money, I'd be wrestling Kalisto on SmackDown this Thursday. So it's not like a whole thing about, you know, my, like, it's part of it's like, you know, he feels, like he said, you know, it's not, it's funny because he talks about something that people don't really think about, and it sounds kind of weird, but I can see the sense, I don't agree with 100%, but I can see the sense of all, like, it's not fair where we, you know, like, it's a predetermined sport, and we judge the winners so much higher than the losers, even though it's kind of like, we don't really have a choice in it. And I know it's deeper than that because usually the winners are the ones you feel like they're bringing the money in, they're bringing the merchandise in, they're bringing the eyes in. But at the same time, if you busting your ass and you making some chump look good and he's getting 4 times the amount of money you get, you're going to kind of look a certain way.
I did think that that was one of the more interesting points that he made in the write-up, because I don't think he... you know, I mean, he didn't really make a secret what his problem was, really. But, you know, I did find that interesting. It's one of the, you need the numbers to know what the difference is.
Right.
Between the jobbers and the high-end guys.
I mean, I don't think he meant that he or guys at his level should be making the same amount of money as John Cena or anything like that. I think he just meant that they're, you know, once again, I don't know what the downside. Is that Kevin? We don't know what the downside guarantees are. You know, maybe they can be higher for guys who are valuable, but they're not in the big plan. They're not in they don't have the big marketing push behind them. There could be some maybe more done to keep guys like that happy. But once again, there's a lot, you know, there's no second major company in North America. So you have to pick up the litter of anything of anyone in the world to replace. Guys, the mid level or lower. So, I guess I'm saying it. It kind of dems the brakes, kind of.
Yeah, I look at it as a case, and I was talking to someone else about it, like the whole Marvel thing. Because, you know, WWE has the advantage where they probably have the biggest percentage of how much money they bring in compared to how much money they give to their employees. And you look at, like, Avengers Age of Ultron came out, and Robert Downey Jr. made $40 million. Chris Evans made $7 million. Is Robert Downey Jr. 6 times as important as Chris Evans? Like, no. There's a reason Robert Downey Jr. made the money he made, and I know he talked about the whole thing. Like, he wanted his co-stars to make more money, but not at the expense of his, because his whole thing is like, you know, Disney is probably the biggest entertainment company in the world, so they can afford to pay whoever they want to pay. But at the same time, it's like, well, I can't pay you. I can pay you $40 million, and I can pay Scarlett Johansson $20 million, but I can't pay everybody else $15 million because people here to see such and such. And it's almost like the same thing with WWE. Like, you know, John Cena makes what he makes. Undertaker makes what he makes. Like, they're not going to take pay cuts, so why would I make more? And Vince will always frame it that way. The whole thing is like, well, who says they have to take a pay cut? Like, they could afford to probably double the salary of every single employee on their roster, and it probably would. They raise the network to be $10.99 a month and keep it moving. Like, it wouldn't be a drop in the bucket. But they won't, because they don't have to. And fans don't even know. Like, it's always a big deal when salaries come out. Like, you have a guess. Like, sometimes you think, you know, you see some fake lists where you see R-Truth making $600,000 a year or some nonsense like that. Like, that that would be a big story if we saw like actual salaries for wrestlers. And I'm sure it's a reason why it never comes up, because there's probably some side eyes looking around, you know. You and your friend know, we think of this, like, if imagine the New Day, Big E and the Xavier's making a certain amount, and Kofi's making triple. You think they're gonna be friends? You know, actually nothing to do with Kofi Kingston. It's like, yeah, you know, Booty-O's is gonna have a little sour taste in their mouth if something like that ever came out. So
yeah, I remember a situation where they hadn't publicized Major League Soccer's salaries previously, and they got leaked. There were some disgruntled teammates, to say the least.
Right.
So yeah, it's in their best interest to kind of keep that under wraps. And just to go back to one of your earlier points, Shahid, Ryan Reeves was on Tough Enough in 2004-2005.
Yeah, it's funny how time just flies. And, you know, it was 12 years, like 11, 12 years ago. And just when you hear numbers like that, because it's like, I'll make the same joke, segue to whatever. So, like, why don't Dolph Ziggler get a chance? He's still, you know, like, no. I remember when Dolph Ziggler wrestled Edge for the title, and that was like years ago. Like, Edge has been retired for a long ass time. And I want to say 6 years, 7 years ago? Like, the point is, they're not as young as you think they are. Like, Kofi Kingston and all of them are not these fresh young kids that need a chance. Like, if you've been around almost as long as a decade, you're not this up and comer that's just waiting for your chance. Like, it's a lot of, but you never think about that until you, like, watch the network, we say, oh, yeah, I remember The Miz when he was with John Morrison in 2007 and 2008. And what year is it now? 2016. It's like, wow, that was two presidential terms ago. That was 40 pounds ago. That was like 45 points on my credit score ago. Like, things changed in that time frame. And we don't think about it. Like, we only think about old people when it's like Kane and Big Show and like Mark Henry. It's like, no. Randy Orton's and John Cena's and Dolph Ziggler's and Kofi Kingston's and Jack Swagger's are old. And so are we.
Well, yeah, that's why I about pooped a duck, because the main part of his Wikipedia page says that he was born in 68, and the other part says 81. I was like, if he's older than I am, that's a problem.
Yeah, like 68 with his life.
There's no way, Jim.
He'd be looking very good for his age.
Yeah, no, I'm not close to 81, yeah.
Yeah, I was going with the 81.
But even 81,
he's still 34, so I mean, that's another point that's kind of been floated. Like, the guy only has so much time. So, yeah, if he has people blocking him, you know, why not take a chance elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Ryback is not going to be in the top mix for as a babyface or a heel, because they've already done it. He's been up and down throughout, you know, about 4 years on this run, and you know, he's feuded with John Cena, he feuded with CM Punk, trying to think like who else, he's kind of, well, I mean, he was never going to get an Undertaker feud, and they're never going to go with him with Brock Lesnar. I mean, his booking has been so up and down. I don't see him as a viable opponent for Roman Reigns. So yeah, I think it probably is best for him to, you know, take a trip to Japan and reinvent himself.
And here's my thing: it's like, you could, the thing with WWE is with only a few exceptions, you can book anybody to be credible if you want to, but from their viewpoint, they have no reason to. Like, between the people that are on the roster now and the people that are on NXT, and then the mindset of WWE is now, like, the whole thing. We always talk about the WWE stereotype. You have to be this size and look like this and everything. And Ryback looks like that's the type of person this man will push. Yet AJ Styles is higher than Ryback will ever be. And AJ Styles is everything that people thought Mr. McMahon wouldn't want. So it's like, he's a man out of time, and it's not gonna get any better. Where you don't necessarily have to, you know, you just can't push somebody that's this big and look a certain way when you have one Brock Lesnar who's bigger and can actually wrestle, two all these small guys who can wrestle and get over the crowd, and then more importantly, a mindset of like, we're gonna give these guys a chance more than we would have like 6 or 7 years ago. So he's kind of he's going to get punished by his look because he has the wrong look for today's WWE. And I thought I would never say that when it involves Ryback.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, the thing is also he might need to. Granted, it's only been 4 years, but it maybe feels longer that he's been this big guy Ryback persona. That it's again. A reinvention is probably necessary, so that, you know, his character is that, you know, he seems like a smarter guy, and he's a better athlete than a lot of people probably give him credit for. But his character is a total meathead out of the '80s, and I think that he could evolve from that.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I could look at him, it reminds me of what Batista went through when he came back. Like, Batista wasn't gone that long, but when he came back, it felt like he was from the damn Stone Age. Like, and it wasn't because he did anything wrong. Like, you know, he was still big, but he wasn't as big as he used to be. He didn't look the same. They didn't market him the right way. He's walking around like, I don't know, half these people here, they got me looking like a damn idiot. I'm already making money. I'm making money making movies. And they getting mad at me because I'm not Daniel Bryan. And, like, no offense to Daniel Bryan, but, like, look at Daniel Bryan and look at me. Like, 4 years ago, there's not a bad chance in hell that would ever happen. Because, it's like, you know, Daniel Bryan would have been jobber to the stars. Now it's not. Batista was this big-time star that actually drew money and was actually a big deal coming back and gets, you know, booed after wrestling just because he wasn't Daniel Bryan. They wanted Daniel Bryan. And Batista's probably 5 times the performer that Ryback is.
Oh, yeah. It's an interesting point there with the smaller guys. I mean, it had been kind of obvious, at least on NXT, that the smaller guys were taking over. But I guess adding some of those guys to the main roster really helps balance it out. And, well, obviously the one man you brought up, Styles, got to bypass the whole NXT thing altogether.
It's still amazing, and I know I keep saying it, like it's 2016, and AJ Styles is in the main event wrestling for the WWE title, and it's just one WWE belt. Because I remember everyone saying, like, AJ Styles is a great performer, but he's too small, he's too old, he's too redneck. Like, he will never get a fair shot. And from WrestleMania till now, so I remember WrestleMania, I remember when he lost to Jericho, and people saying, it's like, you know, yeah, he's only going to go so far, no matter how much the crowd like him. He's just a country boy, blah, blah, blah. And then the next night, he becomes the number one contender. And all of a sudden, it's like, I remember we was on a thread. We're like, y'all, like, I can't believe what I'm watching. And I don't know what happened, and I'm done questioning it. Since WrestleMania, there's been a sea change of how they book Raw and how they've treated things. Like, they make everything, they give weight to everything. Even if it's just a few minutes or a second, they make things seem important. They talk about motivation, why are people doing this? They talk about past history. They acknowledge, like, when Roman Reigns comes out, they acknowledge that, you know, not this whole, oh, he's polarizing the WWE universe, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, it's people in the crowd that don't like Roman Reigns. Like, I never heard, when John Cena was going through all that, I never heard them say that. They always say, oh, you know, whether you love him or hate him, John Cena, he's the most polarizing superstar, and blah, blah, blah. And John Cena was trying to defuse it, like saying, you know, the fans can do what they want. Roman Reigns, come on, like, you can boo me all you want. I still got the damn belt, like, kiss my ass. And that's smart, because you might, if you want to have them feel something. And I know people say, oh, it's proven that Roman Reigns not working, because then I'm like, no. It's hard to be a guy that's handpicked by Vince McMahon and look like Roman Reigns and get cheered by everybody. Like, it is not going to happen. especially when he's wrestling small guys. So why even bother? Like, push him as, like, you know, this entitled dickhead that can wrestle and that fits Roman Reigns' personality. Because trust me, if I look, I'm arrogant myself now, but if I look like Roman Reigns, I'd be as big a dickhead as Roman Reigns portrays himself on Roman. And I won't even lie and say otherwise.
Because I think that we talked about this last week, like, Reigns' new catchphrase, it kind of works because it's kind of getting to the point, but it just doesn't still quite feel organic enough out of him to really get it. But good Lord, like, AJ Styles was getting pretty much all the help last night, and people were still booing the shit out of Roman Reigns.
Who's getting it the worst? It's the Usos. I don't know. You probably should just turn them 100% heel, because I don't think they can recover from this. I mean, being Roman Reigns' little cousins, it's just you. I don't know if you'll ever get the crowd back after that.
Yeah, but to their fairness, considering that they kind of got pushed out the paint by one, the New Day, and then two, you know, Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, they went from being the number one babyface team to the number three babyface team. I mean, I know they don't want to get booed, but they were in the main event. And like, I'd rather be Roman Reigns and be Roman Reigns' buddies and get booed and be in the main event than, like, beating the crap-ass Dudley Boys on, like, you know, the second match in the second hour, like they were wasting the time before. Yeah. And I want to say I love how they're booking AJ Styles and Roman Reigns, because depending on your both parties are in the right, depending on your point of view. And normally they look at like AJ Styles' whole thing is, I can beat you one-on-one. These are my friends. I don't need my friends to beat you, but I'm not going to kick my friends to the curb because they're my friends. And they booked him like strong enough where he can hang with Roman Reigns and, you know, hold himself, not get squashed. Roman Reigns' thing is like, you know, but every time Roman Reigns looked around, I was like, you got these two bald jackasses coming in, jumping my cousins. They're hitting them with a chair. They're coming out to help you. And this whole thing, like, you say you can be, like, I know you can wrestle, but why are they always around? And you saw how Raw ended. Like, if you look at AJ Styles, he didn't want to hit Roman with the chair, so he's pointing the honorable thing. And then the Usos started that crap, so, you know, he's going to defend his buddies. But Roman Reigns turns around, he sees this AJ Styles beating his fan with a chair. It's like, this is the shit I've been talking about since you came. And, I mean, that's perfect. I don't have any complaints about it, cause especially considering, like, they're giving AJ Styles a chance.
Yeah, I loved everything about the main event, the match, the post-match. Everything you said, it's everything Vince Russo said his book, his creative was, but but applied better. It's actual people in charge who actually know what they're doing as far as shades of gray and ambiguous characters. You know, everyone's kind of being a dick, but everyone's got strong motivations as to what they're doing.
Yeah, because you have Roman Reigns, who's supposed to be the babyface, treated like a heel, but acting like, you know, he hasn't really done anything wrong in this. He's like, I'm standing up for my family. I think you're trying to take the easy way out. And then you have AJ Styles, who's the plucky underdog babyface who has his friends keep jumping in for him, even when he don't ask. And they had great chemistry. Like, that match they had, the pay-per-view, was awesome, even with the stops. And for all this talk, I love the old Roman Reigns can't wrestle. He only has 5 moves. I'm like, yeah, he has 2 more moves than Dean Ambrose. I never hear people complain about Dean Ambrose's number of moves. Like, moves are great on video games, but they're really irrelevant when it comes to wrestling, unless your moniker is like, I have a zillion. Like, do I really need to see 17 versions of a German suplex? Like, that's just irrelevant to me. All I care about is an entertaining match, and can you entertain me? Can you make it look real, no matter what style you do? And I know the complaint with him was saying he can't, but I'm like, I've heard the same thing with John Cena. You have enough good matches with good people. It's not always the person carrying you, because, you know, I know Ric Flair can carry a broomstick, but, you know, That happened in the '80s. He wasn't carrying no damn broomsticks in the '90s or 2000s. Like, if you can't go, you're going to look embarrassing, because I have yet to see the Miz have a great match. And he's been in a ring with plenty of great people, so maybe he's that broomstick that just tripped people up. So give Roman Reigns credit, give AJ Styles a lot of credit, and I look forward to seeing how this ends. Like, is Anderson and Gallows going to turn? What does Finn Balor do? Like, what goes on? Like, I actually care, and I like that they ended that pay-per-view with the main event for the next pay-per-view, and it's been a long time since that's happened.
It's kind of interesting. Well, and I guess it's part of that whole like, how they've changed how Raw works. During Payback there, they showed all those headlines on websites much larger than ours, about talking.
And none of those sponsor headlines at all. I guarantee you, none of them.
What'd you say?
And none of them sponsored headlines at all, I'm sure. But actually, I don't know if it was sponsored, but, you know, obviously all these people, their wrestling guy covering wrestling now, you know, they're all trying to get in with WWE. You know, it's a game being played.
But I mean, it's just interesting to me that, but they were talking about how Shane has changed Raw, and it's one of those things where I still don't feel like we've heard any, like, kind of backstage rumors or anything about how Raw is running now. Like, I mean, I always just assumed that Shane was just de facto head that had nothing to do with what was really behind Raw. So, something has changed as far as input or how they're doing it. And I guess I'm kind of interested to know that, but it's probably, again, something that we won't know that much about until a later time.
It's funny because people have said, you know, maybe Triple H kidnapped Vince, but you hear, like, no, Vince is still in control. Vince is still have final say. I don't know what changed. Like, I know what changed. I don't know why or how, but I guess they came with a concerted effort. Like, we're just going to make everything try to make sense. And even the stuff that's kind of stupid, we try to explain. Like, a good example is the whole Charlotte-Natalya feud. Like, I remember they had that match last year on the network, and it was like, it was a great match. It was a very good match. I didn't think anything of it. But then they brought it up to acknowledge it after, you know, Charlotte had a new belt. They had a match. They had great chemistry. Then they had another match. Like, I turn on SportsCenter, and I see Natalya being interviewed by the coach talking about her upcoming match and how she's looking forward to having Bret Hart in her corner. Usually, the only time I ever thought I would see Natalya on ESPN is if she died or if she shot a hockey player. Like, I'm not used to this. I didn't think I would see them, you know, building up a women's match, and it was a non-WrestleMania. And you see how the last minute, you know, like, I didn't even pay attention to Charles Robinson being there until they rang the bell, and then I put two and two together. Like this is so, you know, so slippery, yeah, little Nate.
Right.
But to see slammery footage on Raw, explaining, like, where the little Nate's nickname came from, having the crowd care that much that they're chanting cheater there, and, like, building up all the stuff, that's hilarious. And then to have Stephanie McMahon come there, like, she's playing that role, like, she's not being a heel, like, she has heelish tendencies, but she's not necessarily being a heel, and it could easily be one, like, you know, Shane is the boy wanted coming back, like, she's trying to play, you know, I don't like the decision, but I'm going to try to play straight because it's my dad, it's my brother, and to see her say what everyone else is saying, like, you know, yeah, Rick, why don't you kind of, like, sit this one out, because you kind of, you don't want anyone that's jumping in when your daughter needs help all the time. And, like, what everyone else has been saying, like, Dr. Phil said it, the commentator said it, like, they've been beating us over the head with this for months. And that little tone, like, can I get a one more time for old time's sake? just had me rolling, because that'd be something, because she's just tone deaf enough to say something like that. Like, yes, I know I just ruined your dreams. Can you do this one thing for me because my husband's your friend?
Right, yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. I thought, you know, everything was good. You know, once again, everything they've done with Charlotte and Natalya. I know a lot of people didn't like the going back to Montreal finish, but you know, they needed to do something to get to a rematch. It's Extreme Rules, so it's got to have a gimmick. And I guess, you know, obviously, and for what the story has been, a submission match is a good gimmick for it. I there's still time in the story, but I wish they would have said something along the lines of, you know, just saying that, you know, Charles Robinson won't be the referee this time, or that they're going to have a special guest referee, because the issue was with the referee, you know, in the payback match. But no, I mean, I liked it a lot. Charlotte has just come into her own so much these last couple of months. She carries herself like a star. She handles the bulk of the talking when her and Ric Flair are out there. She does not miss a beat. Charlotte has been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and it's funny because people were kind of wondering. I'm like, why are we that surprised that the daughter of Ric Flair, who looks like that and can wrestle like that, could be a heel? Like, especially Miss, I'm better than you because of my genetics and my daddy. Like, yeah, even when he was trying to, it was always weird that he pushed his baby face because there were all things like, I'm the best wrestler in WWE because I have superior genetics compared to wrestling mongrels thanks to my daddy. Like, yeah, that might be babyface in like 40s Germany. That shit ain't flying like now. So her being a heel just fits, and they acknowledged it and they pushed it. And just the fact that they have this long going feud, and you don't really, I know they crowd chant for Sasha Banks. You're not even really thinking about Sasha Banks right now. And the Bellas, you know, both Bellas are gone, and the rest of, beside Becky Lynch and Emma, like the rest of the women are kind of like nowhere to be found. But you don't hear any complaints because this feud has worked. Like, they've been giving weight to these people. And it's been the whole thing. Like, that's been the story overall. Like, they've given weight. If a match was on the show or a pay-per-view, they gave it weight. They talked about it at least for 30 seconds. Like, made you care. And it was none of this, you know, beside that nonsense with R-Truth and I don't know what the hell was going on with that. Like, I know the story behind that, but the less words given to that train wreck, the better. But for the majority of most of the matches, they give you the reason to care. They make the belt seem important, like both secondary belts, the tag belts, the title belts, and even teams that didn't have belts. Like, they give them time. And that's all we've ever asked. Like, give me a reason why these two people are fighting. It doesn't take a lot, but if you do that, people will care. And that's been the biggest difference. They've been doing that.
I don't know if they've cut down on the number of people on the shows or not. I mean, that'd have to be something I'd have to look into. But they do just seem to be concentrating on the stories a little bit better. Because even with, I do think the women's division is still a little bit more of a mess than the men's, just in general. But Emma and Becky have had their problems on TV recently, and I mean, they even at least covered it with their little Twitter beef storyline before the match. So, I mean, it's still probably better than what they were doing much more recently.
The match really, they've been doing so much of it, actually, on it. 2016, and they've been doing so much of this feud on social media that I feel like, you know, a lot of people haven't been really seeing a lot of the little angles they've done with Becky Lynch and Emma, so it really wasn't positioned very well. The crowd was pretty quiet during the match, except for various points, you know, with Becky Lynch. I don't know how serious they're going to be with Emma, pushing Emma as a heel, but it definitely needs more work for people for the main WWE audience to take her seriously.
But the fact that they're giving her a chance speaks a lot, because when she was first here, she was just this goofball with the Zelda music and the dumbass dance, and you put with Santino, and like, yeah, exactly, that fucking nonsense. It's like, you know, that's the whole thing with kind of NXT, is like, some of those gimmicks work there, but they can easily die on the vine. It's kind of like you never know unless you explain it. And the fact that they, even after she had her legal snap fuse and jokes that have been made about that, shout out to Edge and Christian, but the fact that she got a main, that she's back on the main event roster and got a second chance and, like, you know, wrestling, I'm like, more, you know, you get more stuff of that, people will, like, if you invest in somebody enough, people will notice and people will care. Like, the whole thing with, like, Cesaro, like, how many start and stop, how many start and stops have they had with him? And it's kind of like, you know, he just needs a chance. Everyone likes him except for Vince. And now it's the whole thing. Who would have thought putting him in a suit and getting, like, James Bond, Titantron, and glasses would be the key? Like, just a little, like, a little change like that that would seem idiotic, you know, on paper, works because it fits him. Like, there's little changes like that. And now people behind him because it's like, okay, he's getting a Titantron. He actually has a Cesaro section t-shirt. So they can make money off this instead of this whole hijack the thing. And fans kind of notice that. Like, if you're getting pushed, they pay attention.
I could handle removing the sunglasses, to be completely honest with you. But outside of that, I do like the new look, and it certainly helps helps his presentation. But, I mean, he's another one where I don't feel like they gave him a whole lot of mic time either. So, but he's gotten it the last few weeks. He's still not the best talker, but I mean, any talking helps.
Yeah, like you have to get your reps in on the mic to get better. Like, everyone's not natural talkers, and you only, if you're going to get better, you have to get better through practice. And when they first had him talking the whole, I can say dropkick in six languages, like, okay, that's nice. You can say all these multiple languages. That's not going to really make a difference. Like, there's a difference between, like, it's, I say it's gimmick talking, it's catchphrase talking, and it's talking. Like, you have a lot of people that can do a catchphrase all day long or acting a gimmick. Like, it's easy to have something that people chant along with. But to actually talk with the mic and talk about something and make it seem important and make it seem believable instead of you stumbling over your word, that takes practice. And his whole thing is, like, I know it's the whole foreign thing, but that culture, like, he's a cultured talker. And that works as a heel because Americans equate intelligence with being evil. But it's whatever, especially in the wrestling, you know, universe, like, oh, he's too damn smart to be cheered. Like, we like our dumb and tough guys. Like, so as a baby face, it's kind of like he's getting better at it, but it's kind of, he's always going to have that hurdle, but he's slowly, steadily climbing it. And them combining two feuds, like him and The Miz and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and having them all have a reason to have, you know, the title, makes the title important and gives them something to do. Because, you know, Miz was down on the vine with that stupid Hollywood crap. And now he's there with his wife on the road, piling up with Cesaro, Sami Zayn, and Kevin Owens. Like, he'll have a decent match just by being in a ring with them. That's, even no matter what happens, he's going to be better off because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got this Miz character, you know, it's still the Hollywood deal, but it's actually, like, the more believable Hollywood deal. Now he's got the beautiful woman, they're doing the red carpet entrance. You know, no one believes the Miz is a tough guy. So he's the guy who truly can see that honky-tonk man character who can just lose 100 non-title matches, but always squeak by when it counts.
Well, and this was another topic that got brought up earlier, and I started mentioning it in the Almost Live, definitely half-assed review of Raw. It's Cesaro. His move count is somewhere around uppercut and then nothing else. And everyone loves him. Like, the number of moves he executes is kind of limited. I mean, I know the neutralizer's in there and a couple other things, but yeah, it's kind of weird who gets chosen as not having a move set and who does. It's always an interesting thing.
It's always been like that. Like, when people don't pay attention, like, counting the moves, and I've always said it's not necessarily about the move, rules. It's about when you do them, how you do them, how they work. Because, you know, Brock Lesnar, when he first came, he was, you know, young Brock Lesnar was doing 15, 20 moves. Brock Lesnar today maybe does 4. No one cared because those 4 matter. Like, you don't have to do a, if you do a zillion moves, like I call it the whole Nova thing. Like, you can do all the moves in the world and be like Nova and Kane, but if people don't pay attention, who cares? Like, most WWE wrestlers have a few amount of moves because the fans want to see the moves they like, and any extra stuff is unnecessary. It's just a waste. Like, you know, either you're going to get hit in the face with a body part, or you're going to get slammed in a certain way, either back first, neck first, or shoulder first. So everything else is just a variation. Like, okay, one guy does a drag suplex, one does a German suplex, one does a tiger suplex. It all ends with you laying on your back with somebody grabbed by the damn waist. So you don't need somebody to do all 3 to prove a point. Oh, look at me. I know 14 suplexes and 6 different clotheslines. Who gives a rat's ass? Like, do I care about the match? Like, Dean Ambrose wrestling on that Joker with those shitty-ass jeans and those ugly punches and ugly-ass elbows, and it doesn't make a difference because it looks like he's really fighting. The moves don't look crisp. I would never look at him as, like, being some ring technician, but he puts a match together because that's what he does, and that's all that matters with all. Like somebody like The Miz, his whole thing is not the number moves. His moves looks like he's play fighting. It's his biggest issue. And I don't care how many moves he looks like. He's like, he wouldn't hurt Maurice hitting that crap. So there's no point in him trying to be a tough guy like Chris said, because he's the, like, I remember him from the real world. Like, I remember him from Tough Enough. I remember when he was came in SmackDown, he's butchering the Diva contest and all that. Like, he's never been a tough guy. You've heard the backstage story, like, he got kicked out of locker rooms and this and that. Miz is a big guy, but I would have no problem trying to get him. Like, if I saw him in a bar, I wouldn't have any problem fighting him. Just to look at Maurice, because nothing about push that. There's no point in trying to be something you're not. And I'm glad that WWE's the whole Paul Heyman thing
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, no, but go ahead, Kev. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. You fuzzed out a little bit on us there, Shahid, at the end.
Okay, it was just me.
No, okay. It wasn't just you. But I think I got the point anyway. But because I was not all that intimidated by The Miz when I ran into him, considering he wasn't that much bigger than me, it would have been hard to be worried about getting in a fight with him.
Right. Yeah. Remember back like in ECW when Taz would like quote unquote challenge whoever the champion of WWF and WCW were in a shoot, and it's just like, who the hell cares? You know, they're drawing 110 times more than you. That's what matters. As long as someone is presented in the right way, that they can be in a good position to make money and to be a viable part of the card. And that's what the Miz has right now. He hadn't had it in a while. I mean, he was definitely just, you know, a moan and groan part of the show, like, oh, this guy again. But no, ever since, once again, since WrestleMania, the night after WrestleMania, and, you know, and adding Maurice to the act, and everything's been good for him, and good for him. I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, like, being tough means something, like, if you're the top. Like, there's a reason Taz said that, like, you know, I have to have that mindset because I know how, like, I'm built like a fire hydrant. So I have to make people think, like, I'm really tough to earn this belt. And I know it's kind of like, well, who cares? Because it's not like the 60s and 70s, but it's still run by people who have that same mindset. Like, you don't want to feel like you go to WWE and you see the world champion, and it's like, yeah, I can take him to fight. And you just a fan with some popcorn with your little 6-year-old. And you never try to test him in the rings, because it's like, even if I win, I'm losing. Like The Miz, yeah, I test him. So, like something like that. But it's like, you know, don't even like book them to make it, you know, make sense. Like, no matter, like, they hit with that. Even the battle royal for Callisto's belt, even though it's always funny when I see luchadors in suits, because I should be used to it watching Lucha Underground. I'm like, Callisto looks like he's going to traffic court because he had a speeding ticket, like a super sharp, but it's just like the suit fit. But it's just so, like, see this short man with a luchador, with a lucha mask, you know, talking decent English, and they get upset and busting out Spanish. Like, they brought up, you know, JBL was a Rey Mysterio, and they actually mentioned Rey Mysterio's name. Like, Callisto, I was like, I didn't think they would go there because, you know, Rey Mysterio's still around wrestling somewhere they don't really talk about. So you can tell he was nervous the whole thing with, like, getting the reps. Like, you can tell he was nervous on the mic, definitely. But they gave him a chance. And I am looking so much forward to seeing him and Rusev. Like, I think that feud is going to be awesome because, you know, Rusev is like the big, burly bully that can, he can wrestle his ass off. Lana there just, you know, cracking jokes and just looking at this little itty-bitty man. Like, did he call him a stupid Mexican? Because I know Rusev has, he has a way of, like, I remember when he called Rock a piece of American garbage. So, I wouldn't be surprised by that. Like, that's a good fit with those. I'm looking forward to that. And it says a lot about Raw and the St. Louis crowd and what they've done, that when it was him and Zack Ryder the last two, the crowd got 100% behind Zack Ryder. It made you think, like, maybe, like, you knew he wasn't going to win, but the crowd made you think, like, maybe he have a chance. And think about how they treated Zack Ryder until maybe this season.
Well, he's another guy that I at least, I mean, I think he has limited potential, but I hope he gets more TV time, like he has here recently, than he got, maybe the previous couple of years.
Yeah, he's going to be a sentimental favorite for, you know, they've got that back going for him. They could move him into various situations and the crowd will get behind it. Plus, because now they've actually done the contest where he got the big one. So now, yeah, no, made Zack Ryder. So now, anytime they put him in a future position where he's challenging for a title or in a battle royal or anything of that sort, people will get behind him, and they can actually now believe that he has any chance.
It's funny with Zack Ryder, especially now with the beard. Like, if you look at him, he looks like somebody that you see a big deal because he's handsome. He's got a great look. Like, you know, he's muscular, but not like overly muscled. Like, he looks like a star. But then you see him actually do something. It's like, the look doesn't, you know, like, the look and the height doesn't match. Like, you know, he looks like a star. People say he get a better chance. But it's like, you know, he can do moves. But I never saw, like, a Zack Ryder match. I say, oh, that's a great match. Like, you know, he can talk in skits and stuff, but he's never cut a promo besides the one after Mania talking how he got the belt with Scott Hall. Like, oh, this promo's bringing me in. Like, the Zack Ryder reality never matched the Zack Ryder look. So I've never been the whole, like, Zack needs a chance because he got a chance. I'm like, no, maybe eating cheesecake every day is not a good idea, is how I look at that. So he's just one of those, but at least they gave him a chance, like, considering he won Mania, lost, basically set up the whole thing with The Miz, and then, but give him a little bone with the Battle Royal. Like, kudos. He's about giving his... Rather to see him in that last spot than really anybody else they had there.
So are you saying that he's eating a piece of Emma every day? Is that his cheesecake that he's having?
It's funny, you look at Zack Ryder, you look in the Miz, and then you see that significant other, and it's like, yeah, you know, I won't feel bad if they're not, you know, Miz doesn't have to be the main event of WrestleMania ever again. Like, he already lucked out in more ways than one, considering now and getting shot down by Coral and then on MTV. And now he was in the main event of WrestleMania, one of the biggest ones ever, to beat John Cena. And he's married to, like, a French-Canadian woman that looks like a supermodel. So yeah, good for him. I guess he's toughing up at the end of the day, and what counts.
Well, there was one other topic that was on the docket that I think we can squeeze in here. It's another guy who was a jobber for a very long time in TNA, and more recently he got picked, pushed as a crazy person, in a good sense, I suppose, not in a, I'm trying to think of what Samuel, it's not Samuel Graham, I'm thinking of my good buddy,
Samuel Shaw. Oh, Sam Shaw.
Oh, Mr. Stomping people with dress pants and throwing dropkicks. That's Sam Shaw.
Yeah, that's Sam Shaw.
One arm sleeper shit, Sam Shaw.
Yes.
We're talking about the glory days of TNA right there.
That is the bad kind of crazy person. The good kind of crazy person, because I did end up coming around to it, was crazy Eric Young.
I've just never been a fan. The weird thing is, I dislike serious Eric Young, whether it's crazy Eric Young or more cerebral Eric Young. It's just, I guess the bottom of it is, the character's so up and down over the years. It's so one thing or the other thing, just one extreme or the other. I mean, he's just someone I got very, very sick of and was very glad to no longer have on my team, but I just said, screw it. I wasn't the happiest person when I heard he showed up in NXT, but I guess if it's a one-off, it's just going to be a veteran hand there. I guess it won't be too bad.
It's funny the reaction Eric Young came to go to NXT. I posted a little picture and people were talking like it was Sonny that came to NXT, like, get this piece of garbage off my screen, and like, what the, like, he's going to ruin it. I'm like, it's NXT, he's not taking AJ Styles' spot on Raw, like, relax. He's just somebody that Samoa Joe could be in. I've always admired Eric Young, the wrestler, because he's like an underrated wrestler, like, he can wrestle, but his gimmicks have just been crap. Like, they try to book him like Daniel Bryan. Then they try to book him like Steve Austin. It was almost a whole, like, no gloves. WWE would do something, and then a month later, TNA would copy with Eric Young, and it'd be like a half-ass version of it. It's like, yeah, I didn't like, you know.
There's definitely something to that. I mean, you just reminded that, like, a month after Daniel Bryan had his big run at WrestleMania, they decided to, I think, have Eric Young for Bully Ray for the title, or whoever was the heel champion in 2014, I don't even remember, once again.
Yeah, I think it was Bully Ray.
Yeah, because they actually did that twice. They had like a guy come up from basically jobberdom to beating Bully Ray for the title. So they did it like a year earlier with Chris Sabin as well. That's coming back.
Yeah. So I don't have any problem with them being there. And it's funny how NXT is turning TNA light. Like, you have Austin Aries there, you have Eric Young there. I made the joke, like, you know, like, can you imagine Samoa Joe beating all these NXT, these TNA guys right before he goes to WWE? Like, Jeff Jarrett shows up. And Bull said, like, I'm the true king of Orlando, and I'm going to prove it right now. Like, I know it's not a snowball's chance to know that'll ever happen, but I would pay very good money. I would probably sell half my furniture to see Jeff Jarrett wrestle Samoa Joe at like an NXT takeover.
Oh, that would be amazing.
The reaction that would be, and just hearing Jeff Jarrett just go off on a mic, like, you know, I'm glad Triple H is here because his dumbass Daniel Law never gave me a chance. And just, you know, bring out Karen Angle. Just a, yeah. So, no. That shows you how much I care about Eric Young. I'm talking about Jeff Jarrett. Like, you know, Eric Young is different to me. Like, if he can wrestle, put on good matches, good for him. It's not like it's going to be, you know, Eric Young is going to be in a World Rumble. So,
yeah, I mean, that is, I love how people kind of automatically go to that. They think that for some reason he's going to be Roman Reigns' next opponent for the world title. It's just like they just signed Eric Young. Like, if he makes it out of NXT, which I'm not sure that he even really needs to, do you really think he's going to go that far in the WWE? Like, they're trying to make the Intercontinental title more, well, that and the U.S. title is more important. I don't even know if he's going to get up to that level. So, why not give it a chance? And again, like, everyone agreed that TNA's writing was garbage. Pretty much everyone did. And the people that didn't just don't know what the hell they're talking about. So, it's just like, why don't you give these guys a shot in the WWE where, well, generally NXT has been well received in, well, at least for the last month and a half, Raw has been well received.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a chance. Obviously, I believe tomorrow is when his debut was airing, and I guess somewhat spoiler alert that in the next that was his only appearance during the tapings. They did not, you know, have him come back out again. It might have been something of a tryout for him. I haven't heard if there's an actual, you know, deal signed, you know, long term contract signed there. I mean, somehow James Storm was able to make two appearances in NXT without having an AEW long tier, even a short tier deal signed back in May. So who knows exactly what's going on here? I mean, just again, because the way he was booked, the characters he played, even his general attitude, like, it's almost funny to see him in NXT now, because it's just, he was the guy who would go on Twitter and just curse people out, and they would criticize the slightest bit TNA. He was such a homer, and to see him, you know, realize that, you know, TNA is a dead duck, and it's time to go elsewhere, it's kind of amusing.
Yeah, I have two quick things. One, James Storm, I can just imagine how, like, I'm sure he's not sending Bobby Roode any Christmas cards anytime soon. Just imagine, like, you know, I go to NXT, I get this chance. NXT was probably going to push him. He decides to go back to TNA because, you know, sometimes your bed might be a crappy bed, but it's your bed. I'm going to reform Beer Money. Yeah. And Bobby Roode will leave anyway. So he's sitting there, like, I'm not going to be a rock star spud and all these clowns. Right. Well, my friends leave. And then, two, it's just funny when you see how WWE is now, like, WWE and NXT, how many people are wishing, like, had time. Like, I just imagine it goes from CM Punk's mind right now. But, like, Daniel Bryan doesn't have a choice. Like, you know, injuries kind of took away his chance. But you think of all the names, like, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and AJ Styles, and even, like, Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, or, like, Seth Rollins. Like, all these names that could have wrestle with CM Punk, and he's sitting there, you know, playing his UFC game, playing people online, getting knocked out by Bruce Lee, getting ready for a fight that may never happen. And it's just weird, like, seeing WWE like this, like, doing the stuff that people, you know, when I hear people complain, like, WWE the same old thing, I'm like, no, it's not. Like, just look a year ago, like, the roster, and look at it now, you know, you really gonna tell me you expected one day to hear Michael Cole talk about IWGP champions Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, what they did over Japan, and be friends with AJ Styles, and now they're on Raw, like, in a main event? You really gonna tell me that? You really gonna tell me the Vault Villains they got a shot? And I'll need to talk about that for a go. I didn't pay attention to them on the mic that much, but those lines they were saying had me rolling. So, bada boom. Like, the coolest guy in the emergency room or something like that.
Realest guy in the emergency room.
Dying. And the whole little singing thing and everything. Like, I thought that gimmick was going to die on the vine when they came to the main roster, because that's kind of like an acquired taste. Like, it just seemed like it would fit the main roster. The fact that they're giving them a chance, they're the number one contenders, and they're giving them mic time, both of them. It's like, it's cracks me up when I hear Alvarez talking about, oh, the Vaudevillains aren't doing this, they aren't getting it. I'm like, no. They drop these lines and they're getting booed. Like, they get some chairs because they're so good, but that line about, you know, real, I know you got hurt, but if you were a real man, you would have got up. That got booed. Like, they got real boos. Like, people do not like them. They have this funny look. They got the whole black and white thing, and they're talking trash to a team that everyone likes. Like, that's kudos to them, and kudos that they're given a chance, and Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, like, new people get a chance instead of the damn Dudley boys. If I could have one wish, get crabby-ass Amore Dudley, put him some, like, give him a Legends contract, put him on table for three with, you know, two-step stools, whatever you want to do. I'm just sick of, like, that's, but that's my own feeling about, you know, Amore Dudley, but I like that the new people at NXT are getting a chance. Some of them, because, you know, Apollo Crews, as I've heard from many people, he's there doing his Rocky Maivia too much, just smiling, saying he's happy to be there. And whenever you see Tyler Breeze, you look at what happens when you get pushed incorrectly. But for the new people, good luck.
Well, yeah. I guess with that little soliloquy, we can wrap things up then. I got no problem with it. So, hat to Frango 11, at Chris Calamita, at Shaw Farm D for the brand at Stunt Granny. Everybody have a good night.
Yeah.